Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time you're watching this. Welcome to Reality Bites. I'm Lucian Albertine, one of your hosts. But I'm not alone yet again. I'm with two fabulous individuals. Hello, boys.
How's it, my guy? It's your boy Marlon Patrick over here.
And I'm Lawrence CPT.
What does CPT stand for?
Cape Town. The only Lawrence in Cape Town.
You're not
That's
the only
me.
Lawrence in Cape Town.
Well, according to me, I am. There's no other Lawrence like me.
For on
I'm unique.
TikTok.
And daughter with the bunnies.
Oh! We started early. We're starting it here. Guys, thank you so much for joining us on our last episode with the fabulous Leanne Williams. We saw your comments. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for liking and thank you for sharing. But tonight, hey, wait, hold on. I will tell you this afterwards. Roll that intro, man. Alrighty, y'all. So tonight's guest is none other than a person that I love very much. I've worked with him for years. He is an actor, a television host, a awards host, like a SAFTAs, Summers, Miss SA, all of that vibes. And he is the voice that can trailblaze anybody. Used to be Tom Bellin too, I'm just saying. I mean, guys, come. It's Graham Richards. Can we put our hands together? Hello, Gigi. I call him Gigi. He's my Gigi.
Hello, mommy. And that's our relationship, to you look after me. And I love you, Garland.
Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you so much. This is exactly how you want to do TV.
Say welcome.
Good morning.
You're the host.
But we obviously, it's a very glaring difference from our environment, our three little friends. All friends joining us. Okay, what a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. I mean, if there was any person that I would ask, you are one of them. And thank you for making time to come to Reality Bites.
Thank you. Well, you make time all the time. So it
true.
There's a gibbet, man. He could probably tell you more about me than I can tell you about
him. I mean,
but I wouldn't want to tell you. He probably does.
We need a couple of years to have that conversation to be finished. All right, Gigi, so on Reality Bites, we speak about the truth, perspective, and journeys, and the person behind the persona in the media. I mean, you've been in the media since you were a teenager.
Yeah, a lot longer than I have it.
Correct. Yes. If you think of it, Graham, yeah, longer the industry than he's not. I mean, yeah. But that's so true because a lot of people don't know that you worked on a very well-known talk show, Felicia Mabuza-Sato.
Felicia Mabuza Sato, I remember
that talk
show, yeah, one of my favorites.
Bye, Felicia.
You would have loved her. You would have loved her. You walk into her office, it's about nine times the size of the studio, and there's one desk, and it's on the...
Ooh.
Sits there, and you must knock, and you must walk 100...
Yeah.
Even her voicemail, when you phone through, would say, from Gladiator... The moment in time lost eternity. It was, she's on a next level, man.
I've met her once years ago in the beginning part of my career in TV. Absolute gem. And I mean, you've working with her. That should have, or could have, or can, or maybe she just shown other, show us a word for it. Development. What did you learn from her, if I can say it in that kind of way?
You know what it is? And this is something I think for a lot of people who try to get into the industry, because as much as you want to find an algorithm for success, or you're looking for like something that you could be taught, and there's no real degree you can do to be a TV presenter. You can approach it from media, you can approach it from news, from journalism, from all these different facets as an actor, performer. But there is no kind of down the line, because it's different with every engagement that you have.
True.
And so you, in essence, are being professionally yourself. So you need these moments where you can see yourself represented, or actually find yourself in that role, to have someone have the faith in you to do something like that. But I was the token white. I was the luckiest person alive in 1994 and 1995. You don't understand. So to have someone like Dolly Tomo, from the middle of the South, or for Felicia Mabuza-Sattel, to pick you to voice their show as a 21-year-old white dude, and there was a reason why those sorts of things were happening. And for my whole life, I'd felt like we're doomed as a country. Nothing is authentic. We're talking and preaching what we want to do and where we're going to go, but my lived experience is so polarized and completely the opposite.
Demographic.
It was just crazy because I lived through that. I mean, I finished school in 96, so I was in matric in 95. My mom was held hostage at a voting station while that was going down. It was like we were right in the middle of this, what was happening, and it felt like, okay, we're doomed because no one is actually seeing what's going on. And then one by one, these moments started happening. And it might sound bizarre, but like 96, us winning AFCON, being in that stadium as who I was, authentically in that space, seeing what was going on collectively, like, oh my word, there is a place for me and for the way that I think and who I am. And those sorts of opportunities, the fact that I was given that at that level with someone like that, wow. But the punching power of Felicia Mabuza-Sattel. Yeah. The only thing is every episode, you'd have to end it with the call to action for the guests. And it started to
traumatize me because you'd be like,
has your cousin ever slept with another family member? Have beef? Give us a call. Where?
And that was the voice. That was the voice.
But it's, yeah, I mean, what a privilege. What a privilege.
I still something here remember you from back in the day. And one thing I can say, you are looking very well after yourself, sir. You look absolutely amazing still.
He demands it. No. Yeah. For fashion, it's like...
So me, I'm a huge pageant fan. It's a pleasure. I'm a huge pageant fan. So I've been watching Miss Africa for years. And Miss Universe. That was my favorite thing to do. Name anything and I can tell you exactly who won, what year, etc. So I started watching Miss Africa in 1997 when Kavisha Naika won.
Yes.
And I remember the year after that, you hosted Miss Africa 1998. Can you still remember who won that pageant? What was her name?
Oh, this is like in taking him back.
First of all, can I just say I was absolutely encouraged. If you ever see this, probably she knows this hands down. But I was mad.
I think you're anyone.
Anyone who's ever
Karishna City.
That's it. She was a teacher. I remember that because she flew so under the radar. And I remember another lesson, and that's where Michael Moll will be forever. One of my favorite human beings, because he guided me through this. He wasn't that much older than me, but of course he was Michael Moll and represented just this incredible human being and still does it.
Still does.
When it comes into our setting, still mentors everybody. And just, and I was terrified. I was really young. But so apart from falling in love with Karishna Naika, I can remember that night seeing the X Factor kick in. What it actually means for someone to embrace and take that moment. So you would have felt it on stage. You would have seen it there. Mm. Where there's a moment.
You've got it through the screen.
To have this really shine. I'm so glad that you reminded me of the name. Trust me, there's been a lot of years since then. and a lot of lives. But I can remember that shift when Sonia started to realize for herself that she could actually do it. And how she just suddenly elevated. And there was some power. Like even in the Miss SA team. Because there were a lot of like dual pageants. That was all the on-air manager of SABC1, Keith Pfeiffer. And the late Ken Kirsten was the director who was tragically murdered. And they were just next level. So they would do Sun City Super Bowl, elephants, giraffes, sexy men, strong men. Yeah, everything was going to right turn.
I'm getting excited, Lauren.
you would slide your way onto stage through all the guys. But it was, they had an eye for the big show. And again, that Miss SA, I scripted. When he heard, so we did a campaign for missing children. And he was like, I heard you write, because my only rule in this industry, and you must remember this as you're starting out, bro, is just never say no to anything. You can learn to do
anything.
Okay? Anything. Not true. That you should do anything for this job. I mean, you should have boundaries, but...
Depends. Depends.
Starting out, no. From scratch that, you do what you got to do.
Run naked in this room. Bad heart.
Okay. That's the lighter side.
Exactly.
And stuff. But there is something about being able to get given that opportunity. And I can remember I was all of like 100 kgs, just I'd come from playing rugby at high school. I was like that kind of mindset and everything. And then got walked in and I even rocked up in a vest and I'm sure
show the muscles.
And I arrived and I was by about 30 years the youngest guy in the room. And I just said, everyone looked at me and Keith had he loved younger guys that he could craft and mold on air, because he knew the value of having that.
And longevity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But of course, for the rest of that set, they just gave me one look and they were like, oh yeah, boys, get in here. So I was like, we got to do what you got to do, folks. But the crazy thing is, and again, why when you get interwoven into these amazing, massive moments, and Corsi Johnson had just passed away. He literally died, I think, a few days before that Miss essay. Mm-hmm. And I had to write a tribute to him in 45 seconds or something. I had to write those words and I couldn't.
It happens live sometimes.
Whoa, this is the crazy thing. And I still remember, I think everyone was terrified that I wasn't going to be able to get the thing done. And I'd done the whole script and everything. And I just couldn't get that down. Got to speak to his folks. And it was like, you're now that mouthpiece. You see, I was 19 years old, dude. You were late for this.
Right.
But again, another person, a mentor that gave me an opportunity that just released everything.
Yeah.
I usually admire those people that do the voiceovers and stuff, and they would just speak because I usually do that. Because I usually do that. Like, that's something fun I do. Like,
one in the Bible.
Okay, wait.
Okay, there was one.
Say, for example, we were like to have an Uber or this. Okay, so I used to take train back in the day.
Do you just do random voiceovers?
Random voiceovers. So I will sit in the car and I will say, ladies and gentlemen, please buckle up your seatbelts. We are now leaving to your destination. Please make sure that you have all your belongings safely in your pocket.
Yeah. Okay. And that was the...
They usually steal, yeah. So like, I usually do that. And this was brought to you by Liquor J. I don't know. I just love doing it all the time.
It's the highest paid profession now.
It is.
And I just want to say, it's so awesome to finally meet someone that I've always admired, that was a voice I've heard in real life.
And countless times.
Exactly. On TV, I remember you did the Gladiator Roadshow. That also, yeah. That's
research, well.
But it's a bit stalkery, but it's like.
It's called research, okay?
It's called borderline.
Okay. And yeah, I've got pictures of you when you're.
Well, I am that.
Oh, okay.
What it is, and this is the joy of retrospect being my age, but I remember when they rebranded SABC 2 and they did a montage of all of the TV that had from the beginning of TV.
Yes, 95.
And I was in every
room. Yeah.
And my mates still call me former child star. Guys, I even had a career before that without even being on air.
Yes.
And there was a thing called Mini TV. It was supposed to be like Mini TV. They hired me. I went and did autograph signing in Germiston. I was massive in Germiston. It was amazing. And then it was cancelled before I got on air, but I owned it there. And I was like, what do you do? I'm a TV presenter.
What actor? Is it Dingo? You played the role of Richie in my life?
Yeah, and that's prophetic, eh? Because I hadn't changed my name yet from what it's the other name to my stage name.
Can we talk about that? Because that was part of the situation for later. But can we? So Graham Richards is Graham's stage name. So when I'm upset with Graham on set sometimes, I call him his full government name.
Yeah, like your mom.
Graham Richard Hopkins.
Oh,
you know, yeah. When your parents are cross with you, they call your sister, your brother, the doc, and your name like that. And that solution's exactly the same. No, I found an affidavit that says, I swear I am Graham Richard Hopkins. I lost everything at one point, and at that stage, I just changed my name, but not professionally. So I was like, I have no actual identity left anymore. So when I was really young and I was only acting, and I think I'm an actor who's been doing everything else. And I think if I could just do one thing and make a huge amount of money doing it, it would be acting. It's like my great joy.
100%.
About things for most performers, like once you've been on film or you've done a really good play or you've been in that moment, for those of us who do live and love being in the moment, like hands down. But at the time, there was another actor called Graham Hopkins, spelled slightly differently, who was Barney Bonato back in the day, which was like the first commercially viable thing made in South Africa, I think, TV-wise. And we had the same agent, a fantastic agent, Penny Chantress, who was kind of dealing with a lot of the big guns. They very gently nudged me to change my name. And I was like, why? South Africa. And I was young and stupid. And then I think it got quite disrespectful, to be quite honest. But then I did a string of, I was hosting Miss S18. So it was Graham Hopkins, Miss S18, da-da-da. And he was about 50 odd years old at the time, so I'm sure for him that wasn't a very comfortable thing to be.
Yeah.
And then after a string of rather risque shoots, I did a new shoot for Cosmopolitan.
Mm-hmm.
And then the day that released, then the following day, lawyers' letters came suing me for the name. So I actually had to change my name. And I think if I had been a bit more respectful and you know, I mean, in hindsight, it's easy to speak like that, but I could have avoided all of that. But I love the fact that I had an
endless world.
Crazy, eh?
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. I was reading, you have to change your own name.
How do you even know I'm Graham Richards? I could be. Listen, my Facebook's been completely hacked and now every version of
me. Multiple times. So, yeah, we have this system where Graham's Facebook is being hacked easily 10, 20 times.
It's been less mine over the last 3 years. Other people have had it more than I've had it.
And people scam other people because they do believe it's Graham.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, people are not clever or well experienced to see that, cool, Graham is a known person. You should be able to have more numbers on this Facebook.
Exactly.
But I think they create so much fake accounts to make that following look big and thinking is really Graham. And then they would DM show winners.
Guests on the show where they approach and be like, okay, I loved our time on the show together, and some dear old lady, someone who's very special to me, whose name I won't mention, but being of her generation, just fell line hook by So yeah, and that's been quite a thing. Like, I've actually stepped away from social media completely because of this absolute mistrust. At least with Instagram, you've got facial recognition, and I actually started to get upset when my account wasn't being hacked by someone in Lagos, and I would constantly be getting updates from Lagos. I'm like, yeah, I'm still relevant, baby. And then I'd facial recognition and get it back, and then he would steal it again. I'm like, oh, I wonder how he's doing today. Do you think he's in just in a coffee shop with free Wi-Fi? Like, I wonder, do they have like lots of free Wi-Fi in Nigeria, or do they steal other people's Wi-Fi and they have
as a scammer? Would they ever pay for anything in that space? But it's,
yeah, it just opens your eyes and your mind to what is happening in that space, man. It's crazy.
So it was fun now getting all of those little perspectives of Graham. Yeah. So let's talk about where it all started. Where did Graham grow up? I mean, I know your family. I mean, yet again, I know everybody's family. You know, I'm everybody's business. So where did it all start? Where did Graham grow up?
So I was, hold my beer. I'm born in Cape Town. And yeah, I had an amazing journey through life because I've got an amazing mother. I was brought up by a single mom who just had to deal with, she had to change direction radically for us and because of what life was happening. And that, I think, was a very crazy time. But it just, I'm so fortunate that I had that one consistent element of my mother's nature in my life. To see someone constantly overcoming things and doing so, like now I've got no, like I suppose like a lot of us in the industry, because you've got to have to be resilient in that thing. I just can't see, I will get ground down, but I will always think that it's just part of the process and then I'll get back up again and do it differently, because that's what I've just seen. That's what's been wired into my developmental brain. And but unfortunately, my mother is like a genius. My sister is like a bona fide genius. I think her IQ is like close to 150 or something. She had to go to special schools and stuff. And then there's me thrown into the mix there. And as a teenage boy, you're like the dumbest thing on the planet anyway. So to be in this incredible.
No, I'm gonna stop you there, guys. Graham is actually very, very intelligent.
There's a difference between being articulate and intelligent.
No.
We have a saying in our industry, bullshit baffles brains.
He's very, very diligent. Don't play yourself like that, Graham.
This is a great story, and this is exactly what we do in our work. And Lucian does it as well when he's doing client-facing and otherwise, because our little black book, the people that we meet every day, the people that we form emotional connections with are billionaires, CEOs, thought leaders, world leaders. I've forgotten more interviews with the Kofi Annans and Sir Richard Bransons of the world than I can remember of the people who are nobody. And that seems like quite a strange thing to say, but I can remember individuals, maybe 40,000 interviews, more, maybe more than that, and all of them amazing people. And you think of how much you've enjoyed doing this series, how much you get to, it's like being like, I always think of it's like powerlifting, you know, where you know you're going to get something out of it that, in a competition that you could never get if you were just talking normally, like, you know, the heightened emotion, the emotional connection, all those things. And then you have these moments, and I've had so many of those moments kind of over time. But it's amazing how you gear up to live in the moment in that sense. But what was my original point? See, now we've gone.
of intelligence from your sister to your mother and you, and then how it developed.
The bullshit baffles brains. Yeah. So what we've learned in our space is that you take the intellectual property of the last incredibly intelligent person that you interviewed and you pass it off as your own. The next intelligent person that you
interviewed,
and you just pass that chain on. Eventually it comes full circle. But I remember a story about Albert Einstein being asked who he thought was the most intelligent person in the world, or is he the most? And he said, no, his chauffeur is. And he gave the story, this anecdote, that his chauffeur, on a particular day, he was sick. This is Albert Einstein. He had to deliver one of his presenters' keynote presentation on the theory of relativity and was too sick to do it. And it was a really high-profile event. So his chauffeur said, no, I'll do it. I've heard it 350 times. I'll do it. Great. So he get up, he did the whole thing. He answered some questions even, and then a very scientific question came his way. And he said, you know what? To this reporter, the scientific journalist, he said, you know what? This question is actually so simple, I'm going to give it to my chauffeur to answer. And he pointed at Albert Einstein.
And that is without doubt
how TV works. You've got to just connect those dots. I think that's the key thing for us.
Yeah. I also feel like you have also lost a bit of track there, like I said. So you have, you know, your mother Sue, you know, and your sister Jen. And
so, yeah, then I was very fortunate to go to a boarding school, an outdoor-orientated boarding school that... my mom was very sly. She took me to this open day with all these really expensive private schools in KZN. And she was like, okay,
bad.
They had a climbing wall, snake pits, all these crazy cool things. And I was like, I want to go to that school. She said, okay, then you've got to get a 93% average at school and you can qualify for a scholarship, do this, 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 and this. And I went from having zero academic potential at all within the space of 1 year, qualified to get in on an academic scholarship.
Wow.
And then I had to maintain it while I was there, which at a private school with only 7 kids in the class, with a teacher who's being paid, 400,000 rand a month, is quite easy, believe it or not, when you've got the resources.
The mom, I think, did it because of Jen.
Yeah, but this is the thing. It was such a gift. We rode horses, caught snakes. It was like a full-on experience. And the fact that I had to earn that right to be there and stay there was, and it even set me apart in the school where I had a different attitudes, whatever, and that was an early life lesson that I'll keep going back to. When you're the only non-billionaire at the round table having a chat, that's not who you are or what you're worth or how you 100%. Control that moment, what you do with your purpose, how you action things, how you dominate every moment. That's what matters in this world, and you can do it. You can own anyone. You can own the wealthiest person in the world. If it boils down to it, you can just say, "Well, I weigh less than you." That was a great, great kind of platform for me. And then was lucky enough to get to a point where I think my mother could see that I was starting to evolve out of that culture and needed to be in a place that was more representative of the world around me, and went to Model C School, Greenside High in Johannesburg, which was amazing. I'm so far above its weight class, academically, culturally. Every actor that was famous at the time, the Yana Saliers, Bill Flynn, Rex Garner, a generation of actors that only actors will know about, but they were the front runners of the industry. I mean, Yana Saliers, seeing her do Masterclass as a standalone, just, it was like, I remember seeing that and thinking, oh my God, that's a South African doing acting better than I've seen in any person do in any movie. And that's, and my mother would take me to plays, take a shame. She even had my musical aptitude tested.
It was the time you were in Joburg with your mother still in Cape Town.
We all lived in Joburg. My mom slogged and my sister just rocked and just did amazingly well. And then I think because I was acting at school and I was on stage, but I was also debating, and then I was captain of the rugby team. And I was like, again, it didn't matter that I was a particular thing, because I would step into another role, and that's where Greenside was amazing, because they allowed us to
hello you.
And then God forbid that someone would then rag on a debater, because then the whole first team would rock up at the next debating meet and just literally sit and stare at this opposing debating team, and they're like,
Troy Bolton. Troy Bolton of High School Musical. I want to sing, but I also want to be a basketballer.
I couldn't sing or dance at all. Not right, you would have tried. And I was so lucky. So we would have the likes of Yana Saliers stepping in to give you coaching while you were doing your house plays. And so that, I think I'd started, and I'd even done like house plays when I was 8 or 9 at Treberton in the Mooi River, Mooi River Town Ball and stuff. So it was always there. And I think I've no doubt that that's where I will end up once I've financially made the impact that I want to in the world around me. I think that's mainly where the wealth kind of notion for me sits. But that transition, when I left school, I was like, I was the best waiter in the world, I think, because I was a performer. And I even remember the first job I got after being knocked down about 20 times, walking on foot, trying to find it, and eventually got into a restaurant called the Armadillo in Parktown North. And this, as I walked in, she was like, no, I'm sorry, I've just hired the person. I was like, no, wait. And bearing in mind, I hadn't worked it except for being on Benny TV and never being on Benny TV. I was like, I'm a TV presenter, okay? I'm used to communicating. I went hard, and eventually she phoned the person. While I was standing there, she phoned the person and said, I'm sorry, you made a mistake. The job, the position's already been filled. You start. And that restaurant happened to be a cover for laundering drug money for one of the biggest drug cartels in the country. And my life went a completely different route. Thus began the 2000s and the noughties. And it was just the craziest movie-like experience of life. Being on TV, living this, having the most amazing group of friends, all going through this together. Thank God we were all together like that. It was, yeah, just like a movie. If you watch a dated movie from the 90s, that's exactly what it was like.
Listening to what you were saying the whole time, like, from your school days up until now, did you... Was this always something that you wanted to do?
I think I know what I want to do yet.
And to me, that's how it must be. If we are searching for our career, how fucked are we?
Really? Excuse me.
Maybe it's the
the pre-match refreshment. I mean, as we've seen, and we talk about the purpose, because Lucian and I... And I've been lucky enough to have a lot of friends like that in my life, where you connect at work, yes, but you end up stepping up for each other in moments that speak to your purpose or what. So maybe we have a shared purpose to make people feel better about themselves. Born out of completely different baggage.
Yep.
He uses the paddle. I use the feather to do it, but he'll get you there. You know what I'm saying?
I will.
But we are united in our... And he will do that for international superstars who are coming on the show who are either being misrepresented or because he knows his landscape, he knows what works best, what's going to sell tickets for them. But it's done out of this thing because we know what it means to the people who are going to watch. We know what it means to the artist. We know what it means to the mother we interview. We know what it means to the daughter of the person. It's all really relevant. There's a lot of power in that space. So it's, for me, the purpose of what I've always been, like needing to try to help as many people as possible, because you can see things, then you have a responsibility to do something about it. If you can understand things, if you have a gift that can potentially help other people, that's the South African way. It has to be the way that we live our lives. And now we've all gravitated into the same space together. TV allows me to do that time a minute. So I've organically ended up, yeah, I think more than had a... Or maybe I could have got a different job and a different audition. Life's like that, bro. Yeah.
Is it because of the person that you are, right? That did you always believe that there's something special about you, like throughout your life, that there's something about you that sets you apart? But sometimes you just have that feeling inside of you, like, I'm destined for something better. Like, I'm more.
Hmm. We're all a little bit crazy. Okay, so we are on the spectrum, all of us. Yeah. And I know this because I interview everybody, every walk of life. And as much as we all think you're all different, we're all exactly the same. And we all sit on the spectrum, okay? We're all a little bit crazy in some way, all carrying the baggage. And so I, thank goodness, I've had a job that's allowed me to work with people who I can see who I am, where I've come from. It doesn't mean you always have a handle on it. Doesn't mean that you're always in control of your life. It doesn't mean none of that, but at least our life path has given me the opportunity to understand the person that I am. So I now, in retrospect, I can have a lot of those sorts of feelings, but throughout I've always felt completely different or never like I could find my place. And then when I'm in the moment doing these amazing jobs and being able to plug into these bigger energies and be the custodian of these amazing moments, life-changing moments for every person that's involved there, like a Sonia Ricci on Miss SA. That's the biggest moment of her life. And you've got to be the custodian of that moment. And this has happened with PJ Powers, with some of the most amazing influential people in our world, with Archbishop Desmond Tutu. I've been there at some of his most important moments where you get to be that. And that, so for me, like I now can understand a lot of what I felt was a destiny for greatness, and not in that to be super famous or super rich. That's not what greatness is. Your impact in the world around you. And just when you think, and this is something that you need to take on board a lot now as well, because you often don't get to see it, but we will get stopped by people. A mother whose son was on the show 10 years ago, whose life changed forever because of the 8 minutes that you shared with him in that interview. And just, and often hitting those things, and it's not me, it's the amazing atmosphere we have on set. It's the, yes, it's my emotional investment in the moment and in the people that we get, but I'm primed for that. I mean, you poke me and I'll cry.
Yep.
It's like, I'm just that who I am, but even worse with the kids, but we get to be that in that space. So I think, yeah, if anything, I knew that I certainly wouldn't follow a conventional path. But what it is, or the impact, or where
you never did.
But have any of us?
I don't think so. No, we never.
What do you even do, dude? What is your job? Like, how would you, you like me, you're like a Tintin doing whatever's right in front of you doing that.
And yes, yeah. I will get on the floor and I will scrub that floor if I have to, because it needs to get done. And that's the person that I am.
Completely. So you're here.
Always. Even though with my whip in my hand, I am the team player.
And with this entire journey that you're going through in life.
All of it.
I just want to know because you are so fascinating, and I'm really drawn into the person that you are. Seeing that I know you from the TV, from back then, and whatever.
But it's surprising to have this conversation, hey, where you're sitting with a middle-aged white dude, you think, who's this, what angle, where are you coming from?
I know you, girl. Let's lift it out on your chest. So what would you say, like, of this entire journey, like, what was your highlight for you? Is there one specific moment that you can remember that was your highlight?
I can tell you a few of yours.
I mean, here's the beauty, I think, of...
And what we're both still too great, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, unfortunately, I say unfortunately very loosely, because the best of me has generally been present in the worst of times. So my superpower is to be able to do remarkable things when the chips are down. Like, and I think that BNT plays out in the TV space a bit. What it's kind of a part of how I work, in that why live TV is so good for me. And yeah, that is a part of it. But every day is that moment for me. And that's quite a powerful thing.
Mm.
So because I repeat it every day, because it's never the same thing. So you can imagine now it's the thing that I'm doing that gets to be that thing, is that's getting a person to a moment of self-actualization, getting a person to see the world differently, just getting, and it sounds crazy, but our world is positivity, it's gratitude as a mechanic, because you are feeling so shit generally when you wake up in the morning because you're exhausted and the world has been really...
Life was lightning. Oh, yeah.
Life has been laughing. For me, I would turn your hair gray if I told you the stuff that me and my family have been through in the last 3-4 years. My hair's turned gray from it. It's been the best 4 years of my life, because I got to, at the worst moment, go on live TV.
Can we talk about that? Can we talk about that moment? So when COVID hit, obviously, Graham's wife was pregnant at the time, literally on the last. Georgia was born on the day of...
Yeah, the day before lockdown.
The day before lockdown.
Mm.
And Graham was on a maternity leave. Paternity leave. Yes. And that was a hard time for Graham, yet also a beautiful time at the same time.
And this is, I think, where the second half of my life and my journey began, where I had a kind of an existing back injury, a herniated disc that was exacerbated, believe it or not, by running out of circles in the parking lot in our complex, like everyone had to do in that first week of COVID, and with a new baby, and that was like a bit of a thing. And I think it had happened from moving into the place just before, changing a nappy on the side of the road, because I couldn't go into the hospital, and then needed to be in the hospital, and this is with Georgia, who was at that stage about, I think, 2 weeks old. And then it just went, the disc ruptured in my back and started impacting the nerve, which was one of the most painful things I've experienced. But it set off this kind of chain reaction in my body where all the spasming muscles started shearing my spine and my sciatic nerve, because I've got this like proper scoliosis in my spine. And because I've always been fit and strong, I've been able to support that skewed spine, but the lack of activity, all the various fat has kind of led to this thing. Was taken into hospital. They couldn't operate because COVID had just hit. They were like, no, 10 days. They tried epidurals. That didn't work. They sent me home on morphine. And the crazy thing is, if I held Georgia, I wouldn't feel a thing. The dopamine being released in your brain, your natural superpower. The
healing
superpower. Yeah, and it's the same with fighting disease. I mean, that's a whole different rabbit hole we can dive down. But that's basically, I mean, I don't know what I would have done for those 10 days without her. I can't conceive of a way that I wouldn't have shot myself in the head. I've broken bones, ribs. I've done a lot of injuries, but I've never been in pain. I've never had to go to hospital for pain. And that was, it was a very scary place to be. And then had to go in for the op. They did the op. It was a great success in terms of them removing the disc, but they sent me straight home because of COVID. And then there was no post-operative recovery. With a new baby at home, 2 weeks of being off air, then became a month, then became 2 months, then became 5 months of being in the state. Eventually, when the hospitals could take me in to start that essential rehab, I had to go back to work every day because I needed to somehow put money back into the chasm that had been created for everybody over that time. I mean, there are people, I remember sitting with Francois Pienaar on the day that he had to, and this is Francois Pienaar.
Exactly.
On the day that he had to pay all of his staff's salaries with no cash flow for 6 months, he hadn't had revenue coming in. No one's that rich, bro. No one's that rich. If you think you lost, I lost everything times 10. But I needed to in that journey. There's something needed to happen in that transition. But I had the gift of a little black book of billionaires, of captains of industry, of ward counselors, of everybody that I needed to rebuild my life around that in that way. But it still first took that going back into studio. And I can still remember that day. I weighed about 20 kilograms more. I was close to about 100 kgs.
What dad bought?
I weighed at 82. Now, I couldn't stand. I couldn't sit. I was in all the time. And I would just sit and cry because the world was so hectic and everything that we were talking about and doing was just so hectic. Mm-hmm. Everyone was dying. Everyone was losing. Donald Trump was president. I believe when Donald Trump became president of the United States of America, we shifted reality. But the crazy thing, yet again, this job of first of all being able to step back into, and this is live TV. So imagine in loving your work to the point that at your most weak and vulnerable and broken down, where it was more difficult getting out of bed that morning and nearly impossible to put my shoes on, that was easier than going back onto live TV in that state because of the environment that Mother Goose and the rest of us.
But we also had to adapt to you, Graham, because obviously now Graham's back with a back injury / post-op. So we had to adapt to him being a little more slower, going to fitness, constant. Yeah. So it was a lot of things that I had to go through that we also had to work through as a team. But we made it work, and now you are 20 kilos lighter.
And yeah, remember that day, of course, the first person that I meet, my new colleague, who I knew kind of, but not, was Ryle, my unicorn, who just, I don't know where I'd be physically without his guidance and the little kind of nuggets he's down.
Oh, a nature boy.
Yeah, he
makes the round morning.
Yeah, no, you want to go out of a perv. I just walk up to strangers and show them his accounts. I'm like, just look at this for a while.
Well, no, you have to be. It's a multi morning.
He is as sweet as he is beautiful, inside and out. But
in real life and on TV, honest to God, hands down.
I remember this moment. We had this another gift from God, this moment of the, bizarrely enough, a half-hour show in the middle of the day. But
the midday show.
Our timetable, and we just got random given 30 minutes, but it was with one guest. So it was like a podcast, just like this, like just sit and talk. And I remember sitting down, it was on the day where I was at breaking point of loss, and I was thinking of the things that I would be willing to do to feed my kids. Mm-hmm. What? And there was very little that I wouldn't do for my kids. And it was a really good exercise, like a recalibration, but I couldn't reconcile the loss with the risk. The level of loss for a bad case of flu, I can't in my mind, that day, We interviewed a guy who had lost his mom, his dad, and his wife on three consecutive days at three different hospitals.
Wow.
Now, so you imagine you're sitting next to your wife and you're being phoned, or you're sitting next to your mom and you're being phoned to say that your dad is dying, or your... How do you wrap your head around that? Which meant that someone had to lose $1 million to save my mom. Okay, which means, okay, that my mom is alive because someone else there is going through something similar to what I'm going through, or 100 times worse. Everything is okay. And I think that's been the whole journey has been everything, as difficult as it's been, has meant to happen. This is how you have to move forward and go. The world, I think, needed to recalibrate. I think the world has been in a dark, hectic place. I mean, you wake up at that every morning. And you've got to, the first thing you think about is not what your kids are going to have for lunch that day. It's like, what are we going to do about babies dying because of load shedding? Because I've got to interview someone's mother and a politician. I mean, yes, we're a warm, fluffy breakfast show, but we're still interviewing mothers of, you know, in trauma. We're still interviewing children who have been traumatized. Yeah. People have gone through the things that you can't even wrap your head around with. And now you've got to encapsulate that for someone in 8 minutes. It's hectic.
Welcome back, right here on Gravity by Its Stars, where we have fabulous guest Ray Richards, all the way from.
So, Gary, I have a question for you, my guys. So, firstly, I love your story. I've been a flippin' fan of you since the beginning, my guy.
How old are you, bro?
My guy.
How old?
I think put the ball in your board quickly. How old do you think I am?
About 16, bro. You look about 16.
And me?
And me?
Oh, man, no, you're old enough to make your own choices. Okay?
Graham, this is for your home. No,
he's like, oh, ma.
I'm in trouble. I'm going to be big, man.
I'm a flower.
Hey, listen, man, I've reached that age where I have to keep getting the fade to hide the gray now. It was like, yo, you're going for the fade, he says. I'm like, oh, no.
I'm a flower.
No, oh, okay. That's funny.
So yeah, like I said, so you're open fans. Your age, that's me.
Yeah, you said I'm 16.
And listen, now we all have our maturity age. My emotional maturity was capped at about 15, 16. So we all be in good company, geez.
So yeah, like I have one more question for you.
Okay.
Please tell me, like, do you have any initiative that you are extremely passionate about?
Everything. I think I think for me, it's. Now, what used to be kind of pointing the purpose bazooka into kind of feeding schemes or helping kids get into a sponsored kind of environment where they can go to school, those sorts of things, which I've been doing throughout my life, have now turned into helping purpose-driven organizations connect to projects that can kind of potentialize them. And I think energy, it's a big thing at the moment, that being released to the people and what we're going to be able to do now. Because we've been sustaining ourselves, yo. I hate this, like this... the sustainability term, like, surely we want to be more than just staying alive. Like, we want to thrive. So where you've got Ma Lillian, and I always use Ma Lillian as an example, but where she's been feeding her street, she's been looking after the gogo that's running the ECD, she's been
wonderful.
Girls to school and home. That South Africa is built on the backbone of these people who have been doing it. They have been sustaining. Now we need to help them thrive.
Yes.
So a lot of what I'm doing now is connecting those dots, connecting funding, connecting the right kind of projects to the right kind of NGOs who have the right kind of trust built relationship with the people who need, and in my mind, are the greatest investment opportunity, the market with the most growth potential, certainly when it comes to energy. So yeah, it's, and the joy is every day when I get someone sitting down, it's like, chances are they're going to be the head of EPRI, who are launching the biggest energy-driven transformation project in the country, or they're going to be an alderman that's running energy in Western Cape, or, you know, so I'm in a position to be able to, I'm afforded that opportunity. So yeah, so at the moment, that's my main aim, is to try and potentialize and help as many people do more because of the platform that we have. And I mean, you do a similar sort of, your approach from a industry perspective, helping more people, reach more people, build bigger audiences. It's just the way that we wired, and we have this beautiful gateway where we are constantly...
The circle of life in our industry.
Oh, for sure, man.
It's not every day we are fortunate to sit with a person that has such a huge profile within the industry. You gave us your advice on if you start out in business. You know what I mean? Like, for any aspiring people out there today, what advice would you give us
Like Marlon when he finishes school and he's going to find that first.
That's grade 11 now. Grade 11.
It's a weird thing. Like, I think that kids of today have an opportunity.
Far bigger than what we had.
But and I'm speaking to the kids that used to not believe or be capable of imagining a different reality than that they have right now, which is 80% of the world's, 80% of the kids growing up in the Cape, and certainly in the Cape Flats and areas like that, where unless you've seen someone else do it, you can't rewire your brain. Now you've got young Tyler. Now you've got young people all over. And I want you to do something the next time you watch a TikTok or an Instagram, a short video, watch the eyes of the person as they set up to do their content, as they get themselves dialed
or
in.
Or here.
You've got 0.3 seconds or something to bring a person to make an emotional attachment. Otherwise, they're going to leave your content. So kids are starting there. During COVID, we saw everyone taken out of their schools, predominantly varsities, their socioeconomic lens of the world, the limitations that have been built around them. Even schools with 100% pass rate, those that they still can't see the conversion rate in the real world because those kids don't fit in the real world. The real world isn't geared up for them. And I don't mean in some negative, trying to keep them out sense. It's two different realities. It's two different paradigms that needed to shift. Take these kids out of that school, give them free data. But they were supposed to study with that data, but they chose to go on Instagram and TikTok. But they suddenly discovered purpose. They suddenly saw kids who look exactly like them, making up the majority of the kids in the world, and all doing amazing things. You now see young, I've met more purpose-driven young South Africans in the last 6 to 7 months than I have in the last 20 years of my job. And COVID gave us that. I mean, and I can talk about events that have embodied that, where the same 12 schools that were there last year or the year before or pre-COVID, possibly the younger siblings of the exact same families of children living in the same streets with the same bullet holes in their walls, coming back from... It used to be, what do you want to be when you grow up? I'm going to rap. Yeah. Okay, sweet. Spit me a bar. No, I can't rap. Okay, you're 17, 18.
True.
You're gonna, exactly. Okay, what's your plan B? I'm going to play football. Okay, sweet. So who do you play for now? No, I can't really play. Okay, so the only route you can see to a realistic changing of your reality is that. Post-COVID, oh no, my friends and I have, and this will be 1,500 kids, every single one of them. I'm an animator. I write. I've got, they are doing stuff. This last, and I'm talking specifically about one event that it is based from kids coming out of the Cape Flats who come from probably a reality that you can't say they're learners, and obviously they're learners from the life that they lead. That baseline is something that few of us can wrap our heads around, or certainly in my case. This girl came to me and asked, and she was one of the younger attendees there, and she said, I am really good at making connections with people and I communicate well. How can I use that in TV? I stopped.
I said enough immediately now.
Could you think of a better way of describing what TV is, what our job is? And she didn't even do it as a statement. She did it as a question that turned me into her mentor immediately.
Like just by saying that I'm fell in love with her because I want to know this girl. I just know her.
Dude, you talk about a baseline shift. I've been preaching to those kids outside about the fact that you grow up an average of the people that you grow up with. So you will be as successful as the average. And that's why we all try so hard to get our kids into these amazing schools, or move into the southern suburbs, go through the Stepford Wives process of being changed in the way that
girl, though.
And she must have been about 16, 17, living a life that would not have primed her for that kind of amazing insight. I didn't even speak to any other kid. I assumed that all of them had moved up like that. They shifted their own baseline. They raised their own average with each other. I walked on stage and I only spoke to everybody, and it was a freeing, liberating moment for me. That's the world we live in now. So if you want to start in TV, pick up your phone, pick up someone else's phone and start recording yourself. Start interviewing people, talk to people, ask questions, just do it. And if someone asks you, what do you do or what do you want to be? Tell them, I am this. I mean, we were chatting about it earlier. You can be honest about being an inexperienced, pretty crap TV presenter, but you're still a TV presenter. But just take the first step.
I know a few. And I'm going to say no names.
Exactly. He's had to carry a few of us on his back for years, you know?
And I say, don't book them no more.
Well, at least not for paying gigs.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you, Lawrence. Thank you, Lawrence. I'm joking.
I got that one. It's a good one.
And just now, I shouldn't say it in the context of this conversation. Just never say no, man. Yeah. Never say no. Don't undervalue yourself. That's a very different thing to just say yes to everything. You can still value yourself and say yes to opportunities. But if they
yes
ask
to opportunity
you,
and put your boundaries in, and yeah, where the no comes is your boundaries. I will do, I will not.
Yeah.
There you go. Exactly. I mean, I do that.
Be clear. But I can't think of a better time. Video is the most powerful communication tool right now.
100%.
I love the fact that doctors have podcasts, are doing TED Talks, are talking to each other, sharing the information. If my amazing surgeon who had worked on my back, I just sat in with a TED Talk from a 21-year-old kid coming out of the most current medical field, or in terms of intellectual property, I'd be in a different place. Like,
Doctor fell asleep while your surgery was happening.
Awesome.
Guys, someone, they took selfies with me as I was going under. Someone came to ask for photos. And you know when you're all like weird and high and you've got that assless dress on, and they're like, can we come and take a photo? I'm like, I don't even know if you guys work in the hospital.
I know a few
wild stories about very well-known people and people thinking about a job like that while taking selfies and pictures.
Wow, that's
say no names.
That's horrible, actually, if you think about it, like, where's the boundary?
Alrighty, so Graham, this time of the show, we do some little quick-fire questions.
Okay.
We have a few for you.
All right.
Marlon,
our quick-fire guy.
Yes.
Oh, you're
the quick-fire guy. Put some flames in.
Not this personally, okay? But when you're young, you're fast. You still got speed on your side.
Okay,
no
problem. Okay, cool. So it's either this or that, okay?
Okay.
Let's go. Okay, cool. So firstly, we go. Stage of four.
Fuck you, film. Sorry.
Please.
Film is amazing.
Okay. TV or radio?
TV.
Awesome. Winter, summer?
And it sounds weird, but I actually love them both for different reasons.
Okay.
But I'll probably say summer until we have the heat
burn
we've had over the last few weeks. But yeah, probably summer.
Sunset, sunrise.
Sunset, baby.
Love it. Weight lift, CrossFit?
You can't do both.
These days, a nice stroll on the beach. Assisted by my helper, my handler.
Yeah.
And a soul in your hand.
Yeah, I'm always, for me, form follows function. So if I can train anything, it'll be movement-based. So CrossFit, I tease the boys. But everyone's CrossFitting at the moment.
Yeah.
Angry, they're so angry. Yeah. But probably that. Probably CrossFit.
Then lastly, parsley or coriander?
I love coriander. I absolutely adore it. I've got genetic coriander. I can't eat coriander.
Why? What?
You can't do with that. No. I didn't want to say it initially. I didn't want it to be a deal breaker when we first met, but I can't eat coriander, man. I hate it. And they always make me eat it on the show for humorous value.
Why do you think that was in there?
Punishment. Yeah, exactly.
I love coriander.
Sorry.
Why did he say no coriander?
Work then.
Go tandem. Let's go in tandem. Yeah, I'm going tandem. There's also say coriander.
Gene.
Have the answers that I've given you to those questions changed your opinion?
Not at all. I still love you, my guy.
Come on.
Firstly, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, man. What a joy.
But there's a moment where we need to uncover.
Okay.
So your soul to soul moment.
Oh, gosh.
Where life has gone from the ugly to the positive. A short little story. Something you celebrate always. Something very positive in your life, something on the sunny side.
There have been so many magical moments like that. It is, and I know everyone says that when you've done a job like this for this long, you get to be a part of so many magical, magical moments. And I don't want it to sound, because it's a dark thing that I'm talking about, but it was a very powerful thing for me. And you might remember this period on air. So when I first arrived in Cape Town again, the sine wave of my life, I was like a broken human being. I really was. And I didn't expect to get back onto TV in that way. It was like one of those things. I'd gone a very different path at that stage. And then everything just kind of happened. But again, meeting these amazing people and kind of discovering my purpose in the next phase of my life, and also interviewing these amazing people. And then, and Joost, I joke about, you know, Joost often, because I got to interview him as a man who hated himself as a young, super talented, amazing individual, and then gradually gained acceptance of himself as he progressed through his MS journey. And I got to cover some pretty dramatic moments we did. And where it came to a head for me was, we did a J9 Foundation fundraising
telethon.
And it was just, and I had to do all the interviews with people who had just lost a wife, just, and I did one of the last interviews, I think, with Joost, and that's, so I was a bit of a wreck. And then I got sent away to Durban to do these interviews with NGOs doing amazing work. And we ended up in this place called Amanzimtoti. And I won't mention the organization now because they do protect a lot of people, but they help very young children who can't articulate give critical evidence after rape cases, the worst job you can imagine. And they use these little teddy bears to be able to do that. You can imagine your worst nightmare. And it's such a difficult thing to be able to grasp that. And I met these people, this one young individual, and that's why I say I've forgotten more famous people than the people no one else will ever meet. And this young man, who had amounted to nothing in his life, was a drifter, grifter, kicked out of society to the point that he had backpacked his way off the map down to Amanzimtoti in the middle of nowhere, was responsible for the successful prosecution of over 50 child rapists and murderers. And he had no idea how amazing he was. He was just doing what he had to do. Like, and it, just because he was the only person who maybe could handle the emotional toll of that work.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, and you can check the goosebumps, the daily goosebumps are flying. But in that moment, the role of my job came to bear. I'm there to help everyone else understand what their potential is, or at the very least, how unbelievably amazing they are. Because the most selfless people, the people making the biggest impact on the world, have no clue by design. They have no ego, or maybe their ego has been compensated by a superhero empathy. And make no mistake, some of the most amazing people I've met in the world are narcissists who balance it out by doing more good than anyone else. Are the most politically incorrect people on the planet, like a certain aging golfer who we can no longer shoot live TV with because he will say the most ridiculous thing.
Yeah.
But he is phenomenal in what he is doing for our country and the world around us and what he has done. And you get to be the person that maybe redirects that, that maybe points them in the right direction, that maybe just for that moment gets that parent to feel a little bit better, to understand how amazing their child is or what their life meant. And this speaks to Archbishop Desmond Tutu, sat with me for 3 hours and my mom so that we could interview him. But he sat with us and interviewed us because he was so just, I think, the idea of me bringing my mom to an interview with him and how much I knew about his essence, not the textbook Wikipedia breakdown of what the arch had done for this country, which stands alone as a human triumph, but because I understood him in the baseline of compassion and what he wanted to do and was still so frustrated at not being able to achieve. And the only other person that I understood to act like that was my mom, which is why I had to bring her with, which was connected. And he felt that. You get to have those moments. And that's why I say it's impossible for me to pick, because I have no doubt tomorrow morning on the show, I will have a guest who will give me one of those moments and I will do my cheesy, oh, look, the goosebumps are there. And you'll have to ha-ha-ha-ha and humor me. And,
or not.
Or not, you know, take out the stick. But Brady, that's the joy I've been given, is to just share in these amazing, amazing moments and hopefully help South Africans understand how ridiculously amazing they are.
For that,
one, well, so,
come on,
cheers.
Come on, then.
Thank you, Jake.
Oh, beautiful.
Cheers.
Oh, soul.
Come on. Loving
that.
Thank you,
Jesus. You, I really do love, eh? Not that I don't love you.
He's just saying that. I paid him to say
that. I have to say, because this is a platform to be able to share, normally I only get 8 minutes and that's it, to say my piece, but I'm only standing because of the collaborative effort of the people that have been around me for the last 10, 15 years, and he's been in that
group of maybe five people who have...
It's about to say the top five. How about that?
There's certain people that will rally to your cause when you need them. They'll be your friend. They'll be you. But it doesn't matter. He could probably hate me and still step up for me. Mm. And we do push each other's buttons. We pressure each other. And you'll get that. Because this TV is big personalities, big people, people who care about what they're doing because they're emotionally invested. Mm-hmm. So don't mess with my work. So I'm sure we drive each other insane in that sense.
You work on my nerves sometimes.
I work more on your nerves than you on mine.
Although I work on your nerves. You must tell me that.
No. Only when you favor Ryle, when he's there and I'm there. And then it's.
I must balance it out, Shane.
Can you guys please take this to HR?
HR's for sissies. We don't use HR, man. Come on.
So I'm a sissy.
You don't say.
But yes, I think that.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Rather than shame. Let's go. Shame Marlon. Well, thank you, Graham. I think it was nice to chat to you outside of work on a different platform, but... Therapy. My people. Therapy, yeah. Man. You have to pay for it.
Thank you. Maybe I'll pay for it tomorrow morning. No, thank you so much. What a joy.
Yes, and thank you for enlightening us, especially I've learned a lot today, and I think it's a lot I can take away today. And, you know, go back home and just go, process what I've learned today. And I'm sure one of the things that I'm going to take with me from you that I've heard today is that you must do anything somebody asks you to do, to get to where you want to be. He wants to do anything.
There's one in every room.
That is the one thing. And I will always preach that to everyone else.
Graham
said, you must do anything. Yeah. You know, somebody asks you, never say no.
And he's
just
got a clip
it.
Of me actually saying
that.
Oh, my God.
So, yes, guys, so that is definitely what I'm going to take with me. But also, your journey is just so amazing. And thank you so much for sharing that with us today.
Thank you.
Love you, man.
Love you too.
We haven't cried, which is a first. We didn't. Really.
That's a first for you. Not for me. I rarely cry. But ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us right here on Reality Bites with our wonderful guest, Graham Richards. It was phenomenal. It was long. It was winded. And we know it was Graham. Can I stop? Please follow us on our socials, Reality Bites on Instagram. And please use the official hashtag, Reality Bites Podcast. Or you can do RB1. Marlon.
What's up?
Lawrence.
Yeah. I love you guys.
It's been real.
Till next time, it's been real. And cut.
That's right.
Love it.